I'm not pulling in my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another drive to work, coronavirus edition. Okay, a couple weeks back, I did a podcast on legendary artifacts. I did not finish. There's a bunch more to talk about. Strixhaven got in my way, and I had a bunch of stories about Strixhaven. But I'm back. And so I was going to do part two of my legendary artifact podcast. So just me telling stories about legendary artifacts. It's fun. I like these podcasts. I just go back and remember making cards. So it's kind of fun for me. Okay, so we're going to start with Grimoire of the Dead. So Grimoire of the Dead is from original Innistrad. So it's costs 4 generic mana, legendary artifact, 1 in tap, discard a card, put a study counter on Grimoire of the Dead, tap, remove 3 study counters from Grimoire of the Dead, and sacrifice it. Put all creature cards from all graveyards onto the battlefield under your control. They're black zombies in addition to the other creature types. So this card was literally, we were making Innistrad, and we're like, we got to do the Book of the Damned. And this was just a top-down, like, it's a book that tells you how to raise the dead. And so, I mean, we made it we couldn't call it Book of the Damned. We called it Grimoire of the Dead. But this really, really was like, okay, well, you read it, and okay, yeah, it takes a little bit of time to use it. But eventually, you get to summon everything that's summoned from the graveyards. Okay, next. Albrus the Blinding Blade. So this is from Dark Ascension. It is costs 7 generic mana, legendary artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +1/+0. When a crypt creature deals combat damage to a player, unattach Albrus the Blinding Blade, then transform it. It costs equip 1. And the flip side was a 13-13 called Withengar Unbound. Legendary creature, demon, 13-13. Flying, intimidate, trample. Whenever a player loses the game, put 13 +1/+1 counters on Withengar Unbound. So there's a bunch of things about this thing. So first off, Innistrad introduced the transforming double face cards. All the ones that were in Innistrad were either I think they're all creatures. In fact, all the ones in Innistrad were creatures. A lot of them were werewolves, but there was like, you know, a vampire turned into a bat and such, a little girl that turns into a demon and things. But they're all creatures that transformed into creatures. So one of the things we were interested in trying in Dark Ascension was, hey, was there some risk we can do on it? And one of the ideas we liked a lot was, well, what if it was an artifact that turns into a creature? And that's where this card started. It's an artifact that turns into a creature. Well, why would it turn into a creature? And we came up with the idea, well, it's a blade, and when you sort of, you kill something, then it summons a demon. And one of the running things we had done in Innistrad was the 13 is kind of an unlucky number. And so one of the themes we ran on Innistrad is we like 13 showing up a lot. So it seemed kind of cool to make a 13-13. The other cool thing about this is it clearly was made with multiplayer in mind because it has a trigger that only happens when a player loses a game. Well, in a two-player game, that's not particularly exciting of a trigger. It's like, I've killed you with my Withengar, and it gets bigger. So clearly, you can see us sort of starting to think, you know, I mean, not that we weren't doing multiplayer cards, but clearly this was made with multiplayer in mind. Okay, next, Hellvault, legendary artifact. Costs 3 mana, 3 generic mana. This is from Avastin Restored. 1 in tap, exile target creature you control. 7 in tap, exile target creature you don't control. When Hellvault is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, return all cards exiled with it to the battlefield under their owner's control. Okay, so the Hellvault, for those that might not know their Innistrad story, original Innistrad, there is a device called the Hellvault that a lot of demons had been stuck into. The Angel Avacyn, I don't know if she made the Hellvault, but she used the Hellvault to trap demons. There are a lot of evil demons and stuff in the world. But when she was trying to trap, who was she trying to trap? One of Liliana's demons. I'm blank of a name, but it'll come to me in a sec. He pulled her in and she got trapped. So what happened was Avacyn and Griselbrand both got trapped in the Hell Vault, and a lot of bad things happened because Avacyn went away. But anyway, it was a big part of the story. And so what happens in the story is Liliana wants Griselbrand because she's seeking the 4 demons that were part of her contract, and she needs to kill all 4 of her demons. Well, one of them's Griselbrand, but he's trapped inside the Hell Vault. And so she, I don't know if tricks is the right word, but gets Thalia to break the Hell Vault Which frees Griselbrand, also frees Absinthe, because she gets restored. But anyway, so this card was just part of the story, and we knew we needed to do a top-down Hell Vault. It's a key part of the story. And so really it was, okay, well, what does the Hell Vault do? It traps things. Well, why would you want to trap things? And then we came across the idea of having two activations, that one was a cheap activation, so you could use it to save your creatures that were about to die, and one was an expensive activation, because you could use that to get rid of your opponent's creatures. But we didn't want to make that too cheap. There's a card that was in the dark that was a land that let you set creatures. And you could use it when your creatures were about to die, and then you could get them back. And I always liked that design. So that design inspired Hell Vault. Okay, next up, we go to Theros. So there's four legendary creatures I want to talk about in Theros. Spear of Heliod, Bident of Thassa, Whip of Erebos, Hammer of Perforos, and Bow of Nylea. So the Spear of Heliod was one white. So all five of these are legendary enchantment artifacts. And each one of them has a static ability and has an activated ability. So Spear of Heliod is creatures you control get +1/+1. One white tap, destroy target creature that dealt damage to you this turn. Bident of Thassa said, whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. One and tap, creatures your opponent controls attack this turn if able. Whip of Erebos, creatures you control have lifelink. Two black tap, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. It gains haste. Exile at the beginning of your next end step. If it would leave the battlefield, exile instead of putting it anywhere else. Activate the ability only anytime you could activate a sorcery. Hammer Perforos, creatures you control have haste. Two in red to tap, sacrifice a land, put a 3/3 colorless golem enchantment artifact creature on the battlefield. And Bow of Nylea is attack creatures you control have death touch. One green and tap, choose one, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature, or Bow of Nylea deals 2 damage to target creature with flying, or you gain 3 life, or put up to 4 target cards from your graveyard on the bottom of your library in any order. Okay, whew. Okay, so starters, these originally were supposed to be legendary enchantment artifact equipment. They're supposed to be equipment. It literally didn't fit on the line. We could not fit it. Legendary enchantment artifact takes up most of the line. You might be able to fit a tiny creature type if it was a creature type, but there's just no space. So we ended up making them global enchantments, and like, well, the god's using them. Like you, the planeswalker, the god is using them. So each one of them was designed to sort of capture the essence of the god. So Heliod was kind of a Zeus-ish god. So it boosts your creatures, but also Heliod likes to smite things, as did Zeus, to be fair. So it has sort of a, you harm me, I kill you. Thassa is kind of a, you know, Poseidon-ish sea god. So we gave it, I think the activation was to you can force people to, because Thassa tends to goad people. And then we just needed a basic good ability, so we ended up giving it a curiosity ability, that when creatures hit, you draw a card. This one is not quite as sea-flavored as some of the other ones are. Whip of Erebos, so he's the god of the underworld, so it made sense for Erebos' ability to get things out of the underworld, because he oversaw the underworld. I think lifelink just, we needed a very short static ability, because his activated ability was so long. Perforos is sort of the builder, so we like the idea that he gave things haste, and then you could sack a land to make golems, so he sort of carved golems out of a land, which we thought was cool. And then Bow of Nylea, she's sort of the nature goddess. And so attack creatures have death touch, so she's a hunter, that made sense. And then you're kind of using the bow to do things. And like, so the cool thing about it is it has a 1/2/3/4 design. We like doing this. So it's a +1/+1 counter, or 2 damage to target creature with flying, or gain 3 life, or put the 4 cards from your graveyard on the bottom of your library in any order. So it sort of did this 1/2/3/4 thing, which is kind of cool. Okay, next, Heroes Podium. I don't know if I have a story for Heroes. I'm going to skip over Heroes Podium. Next is Godsend. So Godsend is from Journey to Nyx. One white, legendary artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +3/+3. Whatever equipped creature blocked or becomes blocked by one or more creatures, you may exile one of those creatures. Opponents can't cast cards with the same name as cards exiled of Godsend. Okay, so this is an equip 3. This is another top-down story card. So, Heliod sends Elspeth on a mission and gives her this sword. Or is it a spear? I'm not sure whether it's kind of part spears, part sword. But anyway, it's cute because God's End. Is it God's End or Godsend? It's kind of both. But anyway, in the story, she uses it to kill Xenagos. And so we wanted something that was powerful and exciting, and we made it legendary just because it's clearly one key thing in the story. But one of the things that's kind of fun about this card is that the idea is that once you kill something, that you can't then cast another version of it. Once she kills it, it's dead. There's no longer casting it. So I thought that was cool. Hall of Triumph was also from Journey to Nyx. Three generic mana, legendary artifact. As Hall of Triumph enters the battlefield, choose a color. Creatures you control of the chosen color get +1/+1. Sometimes we like to put an artifact with these general abilities that are just generally useful. And the idea here is, well, whatever deck needs it, you can pick the color you want. And just granted, +1/+1 to your team is a general thing that we thought we could sort of put there. Okay, next up, the Chain Veil. So four generic mana. This is from Magic 2015. Legendary artifact. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you didn't activate a loyalty ability of a planeswalker this turn, you lose 2 life. 4 and tap. For each planeswalker you control, you may activate one of its loyal abilities once this turn, so none of its loyal abilities have been activated this turn. So the Chain Veil is an item that Liliana got her hands on that makes her very powerful, but is very harmful. So the idea was, this was this top-down Chain Veil. So the idea we liked is, the activate ability, it lets you sort of get extra abilities out of planeswalkers, but it comes at a life loss. Like there's a penalty to using it. And once again, that was simply just top down. Okay, next up, Dragon's Throne of Tarkir, legendary artifact equipment. Equipment creature has defender and 2 tap. Other creatures you control gain trample and get +X/+X at the end of turn, where X is this creature's power. Equip 3. Okay, so this card came about because when they were making the world building, one of the artists that was doing the world building drew this, like, because the idea was the dragons are all dead, right? In Dragons of Tarkir. I'm sorry, in Throne of Tarkir. Not Dragons of Tarkir. This was Khaz of Tarkir. In Khaz of Tarkir, the dragons are all dead. They would come back when the timeline gets changed. We'll get to that in a second. But anyway, one of the cool things about this was when we were doing the world building, one of the artists that was doing the world building loved the idea that one of the Khans had a skull, had one of the dragon's skulls as their throne. Like, how can you more communicate the dominance of the Khans over the dragons than the skull of one of the dragons is a throne? I think for the Mardu leader. But anyway, and this was, we literally, so what happens sometimes is there'll be something really cool in the world guide, and we're like, well, we got to do that. And so, like, okay, we want to do the dragon throne. So, okay, we have to figure out what it does. And like I said, this was just, it's a dragon throne. So the idea of it sort of, buffing creatures, the idea that whoever sits on the throne, has influence over everybody, we thought was pretty cool. Okay, next up, Ugin's Nexus. So it costs, and this is also from Khaz of Tarkir. So it costs 5 generic mana, legendary artifact. If a player would begin an extra turn, that player skips that turn instead. If Ugin's Nexus would be put into a graveyard from the battlefield, instead exile it and take an extra turn after this one. So this was another top-down. So in the story, Sarkin returns to Tarkir, his homeworld. And Sarkin is a giant fan of dragons. He grew up in a world where the dragons had all been killed off. But he sparks. He becomes a planeswalker. He travels to other worlds. He sees actual dragons. He actually works for Nicol Bolas. Like, he actually interacts with dragons. And he comes back to his home. And now that he knows that dragons, like, now that he's seen dragons, now that he can become a dragon, he decides that the world, that where the world went astray is that the dragons had died. So he needs to go back in the past and make things right, which he does. It depends on whether or not bringing the dragons back to life was doing the right thing. But to him, it was. Sarkin loves the dragons. So anyway, we needed a device to represent the time travel. So Ugin's Nexus is the means by which he travels back in the past. And we wanted to have to represent that because it's a big, 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 big story point. In fact, I think it's the very last thing. I think the story point in this card is the end of the story. And then he wakes up and, he's... the next thing, he's in the past, and that's the next beginning of the next story. Okay, so next up, what is this set from? This is from Magic Origins. Okay, so we have Almoret's Archive and Pyromancer's Goggles and Sword of the Animus. Okay, I'm going to talk about Pyromancer's Goggles. Chandra has a pair of goggles that she's always had. We decided for some reason not to make Chandra's goggles, because these aren't Chandra's goggles. But when Chandra went and studied at, what was it called? She studied at on Ragatha. One of the people that got revered, one of the planeswalkers that was revered, was Jaya Ballard. Now, little does she know, spoilers if you haven't read the story from 4 years ago, the woman who ran the I don't know, it's monastery, I remember what you call it, but the person who ran the place was Jaya Ballard, but Chandra didn't know that yet. But anyway, these are, I believe, represented Jaya's original goggles. And so we just wanted to come up with something that was cool. So what Pyromancer's goggles do is they cost 5 generic mana. Tap, add red to your mana pool. When that mana is spent to cast a red instant or sorcery, copy that spell, and you may choose new targets for that copy. So the idea is, okay, well, what are, you know, this is Pyromancer's. Well, what are Pyromancer spells? Well, mostly direct damage spells and stuff. It's just, usually are they're instant and sorceries. So like, okay, well, this lets you copy instant sorcery. You can produce mana, and then that mana lets you copy spells when we cast them. So anyway, I think pretty cool. Okay, next up, Tamio's Journal. So Tamio's Journal showed up in Shadows Over Innistrad, and Legendary Artifact. You'll notice, by the way, we skip over Battle for Zendikar. I don't think there were any Legendary Artifacts in Battle for Zendikar, because there was most of the Legendary stuff were colorless because of the Eldrazi. Anyway, interesting little side note. Okay, so Tamio's Journal costs 5 generic mana. At the beginning of your upkeep, investigate. Put a colorless clue artifact token onto the battlefield with 2 sacrifices artifact. Draw a card. Tap, sacrifice 3 clues, search your library for a card, and put the card in your hand, then shuffle your library. Okay, so Tamio was a character that we introduced, I think, in this story. Is this where we introduced Tamio? So Tamio is a scientist, but also a planeswalker. And she studies moons. So Tamio is going from place to place. I think we met Tamio in Avacyn Restored. I think this is not the first time we met Tamio. I think we met Tamio originally in Avacyn Restored. And then we come back and she's still there studying. But anyway, in the story, something happens to Tamio and Jace is trying to solve the mystery. And part of solving the mystery is he finds Tamio's journal. In fact, in the art to the card, you see Jace holding Tamio's journal. And mostly what we wanted is, well, what's Tamio's journal? Well, she's a scientist. She's recording data, right? So, like, okay, well, investigate was a mechanic in the set. Like, it's kind of cool. You can investigate, helps you get cards. And then the idea is you can either get clues, which lets you get cards directly, or you can save up the clues. And then you could, you know, if you figure out the clues, you can go get whatever card you want. You can tutor for a card. Anyway, I thought that was pretty cool. Okay, next up, we have 2 legendary artifacts from Kaladesh. So Aetherworks Marvel costs 4 generic mana, legendary artifact. When a permanent you control is put into a graveyard, you get an energy. And then pay, I think it's 6 energy. Look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may cast a card from among them without paying its mana cost. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in random order. So let me talk about this one first. So this was the card I previewed. So we did this big event. We rented out this whole theater in downtown, right by the community, convention center, and this is for Kaladesh, and we had a big like adventures fair. And anyway, we had a big show where we introduced the set, and I did the part about the mechanics. And the card I introduced, or one of the cards I introduced, was Aetherworks Marvel. This is a very good card. I ended up getting banned for a while, but it is a very powerful card. I think the reason this card got made was we were just trying to do something big and splashy with, because it's a mythic rare. We wanted something big and splashy with energy. And this card is big and it is splashy. The one thing that's funny, you'll notice that it says pay and then it has 6 individual energy symbols. We later realized that we should, I think above 3, we write a number now. we'll say like it should say six energy symbol rather than energy symbol six times. Okay, the other legendary artifact is Sky Sovereign Console Flagship, 5 generic mana, legendary artifact vehicle, flying. When Sky Sovereign Console Flagship enters the battlefield or attacks, it deals 3 damage to target creature or planeswalker an opponent controls. Crew 3. Okay, so Kaladesh was the set that introduced vehicles. And so we knew we wanted some big mythic rare vehicle, and this played a role in the story. So okay, we knew it had to fly because it's a sky ship basically. And the idea was that it just does damage to things. And so every time when it enters, when it attacks, it's constantly damaging things, which sort of played out. I think this is the government controls the ship, and so it's something that the good guys in the story have to deal with. Okay. Next up. Okay, what is next up? We have, Commander 2016. So there's Briah, Ethereum Shaper, and there's Silas Wren, Seeker Adept. I did not work on this set, so I don't have lots of stories for these two. They are very cool designs, though. But I'm gonna move on just because I don't have stories in these two because I did not make it. So next up is Gonti's Aether Heart. And Heart of Kieran. Oh, there's a bunch here from, this is Aether Revolt, right? Yes. So Aether Revolt has a bunch of legendary. Gonti's Aether Heart, Heart of Kieran, Hope of Ghirapur, Paradox Engine, Planar Bridge. Okay, that's it. Heart of Kieran Heart of Kieran costs 2 generic mana, Flying Vigilance, Crew 3. You remove a loyalty counter from a planeswalker you control rather than pay Heart of Kieran's crew costs. So Heart of Kieran is what the good guys use, and they help save the story. And so we liked the idea that it was a vehicle, but that it interacted with planeswalkers in a way that we haven't before. So you can crew it, but you can also use loyalty rather than crew to crew the thing, which is kind of cool. Paradox Engine, whenever you cast a spell, untap, it costs 5 generic mana. Legendary artifact. Whenever you cast a spell, untap all non-land permanents you control. I think we made Paradox Engine just to be a weird build-around card, and I think it ended up, if I remember correctly, they might have made it legendary because it was powerful and they didn't want multiples at once. I think that's why it's legendary. Finally, Planar Bridge. Planar Bridge is 6 generic mana, legendary artifact, 8 and tap. Search your library for a permanent card, put it on the battlefield, and shuffle your library. So Planar Bridge had a big story point. So Tezzeret goes to Kaladesh at behest of Nicol Bolas. He's looking for, it turns out, the Planar Bridge. The reason he wants the Planar Bridge is it allows the user to transport, I think, non-organic things from one plane to another. Because at the point is, the only way to travel, planar travel, is to be a planeswalker. But Bolas has a plan. He has an army of undead creatures that he needs to get to Ravnica for his master plan. And so he uses Tezzeret in that. And Tezzeret is able to steal the Planar Bridge. And that is how Bolas gets his eternal army from Amonkhet to... Now, the interesting thing is, I'm talking about Amonkhet, but Amonkhet hasn't happened yet. Amonkhet is coming up next. Okay, so the next 5 cards... are a cycle, a legendary. We don't have a lot of legendary cycles. I did the god equipment earlier, but there's not a lot of them. So these are the monuments. These were uncommon. So there's Bantu's Monument, Hazoret's Monument, Kefnet's Monument, Oketra's Monument, and Ronus's Monument. So they all work the same. So they're legendary artifacts. They all cost 3. So spells of whatever color of that cycle cost 1 less to cast. So Bantu's is black, Hazoret is red, Kefnet is blue, Oketra is white, and Ronus is green. And then each one has a separate ability that sort of matches them. So Bantu is, whenever you cast a creature spell, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. So he drains when you cast creature spells. Hazoret is, whenever you cast a creature spell, you may discard a card, if you still draw a card. Oh, these are all creature spells. So they all, whenever you do a creature spell, do something. Bantu, the black one, drains the opponent for a life. Hazoret, the red one, lets you rummage, discard and draw. Kefnet, the blue one, freezes a creature, so it taps and doesn't untap. Oketra, the white one, makes a little 1/1 warrior creature token with vigilance. And Rona's the green one, target creature gets +2/+2 till end of turn. And the idea was we were really trying to hammer home when we got to... So Amonkhet is our Egyptian-inspired world, also Bolas, not his home world because he's from Dominaria, but the world that he sort of adopted and that he was... He had his master plan he was building that we didn't quite know. And we really wanted to reflect as much as we could all the Egyptian things. So the idea of there being gods and they have monuments to them just seemed like a really cool thing. And this cycle... This cycle was made to say, we want monuments. How do we get these to be monuments? And so those were done literally as top-down monuments. Okay. Next up, also in Amonkhet, is Throne of the God Pharaoh. So Throne of the God Pharaoh costs 2 generic mana, legendary artifact. At the beginning of your end step, each opponent loses life equal to the number of tapped creatures you control. So the throne is... The throne is a throne of Bolas. And so we just wanted something that was mean. We just wanted a mean spell, and that it just felt very mean. Okay, so next up is where is this from? Commander 2017. It's the Hammer of Nazdan and Ramos Dragon Engine. It did not work with the Commander. I don't have a lot of stories for these. I know Ramos was made. They liked the idea of making Ramos into a 5-color legendary creature. So for a commander, to make a 5-color commander, Ramos has always been tied to all 5 colors. But that's all I really have on that. Okay, but next up are 3 cards that I know quite well. Because next up is Unstable. So we get the Grand Calculatron, Kindslaver, and Croaked Other Thumb. Okay, so I can tell little stories in these, and then I think that'll wrap it up for today. Okay, so Grand Calculatron... each of the factions, there were 5 factions in the set, had a leader. And so the cyborgs, the thing I thought would be really funny about the cyborgs is that their leader started as a human and over time essentially became a computer. So the Grand Calculatron, white and blue, legendary artifact. The Grand Calculatron can be your commander. That was eroded, but it's on the card. When the Grand Calculatron enters the battlefield, each player's hand becomes a program. In ordered row of revealed cards, players can only play the first card of the program. If a card will be put into a player's hand from anywhere, that player reveals it and places it anywhere within the program instead. At the beginning of each player's end step, if that player's program has fewer than 5 cards, they draw the cards equal to the difference. So the idea here is you get to keep drawing cards based on what you play, but you have to sort of set up your cards in order, and you have to do them. So this mechanic came first. I love the idea that the leader of the cyborgs had turned himself into a computer, but that came after we had this card, and then we realized that, oh, this mechanic, originally it was like an enchantment, or like, oh, this would be neat on, what if we made the leader and made him this, and then we can make it a legendary artifact, and then put this ability on it. The reason that the card didn't say you can play as a commander on the card was we ran out of room. And I'd always meant for that to be true. So I rotted it and said, okay, it is true. We wanted every faction to have a legend, at least one legend you could play as a commander. And this was White Blue's only one. So we did a rot of that. Next up is Kindslaver. Kindslaver costs 5 generic mana. 5 and tap, sacrifice Kindslaver. A person outside the game controls target player during their next turn. Neither player may advise that player until the end of that turn. Okay, so this is Mindslaver. It's a riff on Mindslaver. Mindslaver was a card that I originally made for Tempest, but the rules said we couldn't do. I finally made it again in Mirrodin. It actually got printed. And then it got reprinted in Scars of Mirrodin, I believe. But anyway, one of the themes of Unstable was what we call outside assistance, where you go and get people outside the game and have involve them in the game. So the idea of Kindslaver, which by the way is called Friendslaver, I think, in design, was that you would go get somebody else, and then you take over your opponent's turn, but you don't get to decide what to do. Your opponent gets to decide what to do. My favorite story of this, which I might have told before, but it's an awesome story, so I'm going to tell it again, is... I was playing against Ben Hayes, it was in development because Ben led the development, and Ben uses Kindslaver and calls over Tim Aiden, who was one of the editors at the time, who's a pro player, and Tim comes, sits down, looks at the board, and just kills Ben, uses Ben's own thing to Or, I'm sorry, Ben had taken over my turn. He uses my board to kill Ben. And then Tim says, never make me do this again. That was very funny. So the lesson there is don't have Tim do your crimes later. Finally, we have Quark's Other Thumb. Costs 2 generic mana, legendary artifact. If you'd roll a die, instead roll 2 of those dice and ignore one of those results. There was a card called Quark's Thumb that was in... I talked about it in part one. It was in... what was it? Was it Saga? Where is it? Anyway, it was in... and we had made it legendary because... we made it legendary for mechanical purposes because it was problematic if there are 2 in play. But anyway, it was an ongoing joke with us that it was Quark's thumb, but like, doesn't Quark have 2 thumbs? And so when I made this card, which literally is exactly what Quark's thumb is, except instead of with coins, it's dice, I'm like, okay, this has to be Quark's Other Thumb. And it's like, it's an uncommon legendary artifact. We don't even do those that much, but it needed to be uncommon for limited purposes, but it had to be Quark's Other Thumb. There really was no way around it. So, anyway, I'm happy to do that. How Quark got into 2 different universes, I don't know. Or maybe Quark lost his thumb in one universe and then a parallel version in another universe. Anyway, we're getting into parallel universes and things. Anyway, guys, so that is all the time I have for today. I've reached my desk. But I hope you guys are enjoying. I don't know whether I'll do one more of these. There is more to talk about, but I'm not sure I have necessarily have a whole... I might hold off a little bit. Let us build up some more legendary artifacts. I got to look and see. But I'll do a part 3 at some point. There's some more fun stories to tell. But it might be a little ways off. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this. It is fun. I really do enjoy these ones where I just sit down and just tell stories about cards. It's a lot of fun and brings back memories. But anyway, I'm at my desk. So we all know what that means. I mean, this is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. Okay, guys. Well, I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.